And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Elijah Campbell joining us today here on the program. Fellas, how we doing? Elijah, you're looking great over there.
Why, thank you. Substitute teacher in today. The boss is out.
You're doing porous bidding today, huh?
Yeah, I am. I'm the boss now.
Oh, yes.
I'm the PD for today.
I'm the captain now.
Yes. That's right. I have hijacked the ship.
I love it.
So you got Porus, you got his picks.
Got his picks.
You got shots called.
Got the shot.
Are you picking the music or is he picking the
music? Oh, I'm picking the music.
Attaboy. Yeah.
Good.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Always DJing.
That's what I like to hear.
If I'm in the house, then we're boogieing.
I have far more trust in Elijah in that respect than Porus any day. Any day.
I think Porus done just fine.
He's been okay. Yeah.
Adequate.
He doesn't ask us though. Like I mean, like Munson asked us for one. I kind of miss having picking a song every day. I didn't want to say anything, but you know, I kind of.
Well, maybe Elijah will let you pick one.
He doesn't look like he didn't ask either.
I do take requests. Yes. I can also deny requests if they're bad, but I do at least accept them.
There you go. That's half the battle right there.
Okay. All right. I'll think of one that you will find acceptable. Hopefully.
Yeah. Watch my Packers destroy the 49ers last night, or what was left of the 49ers. This is breaking news, in case you were wondering. Nick Mullins, not very good.
Yeah.
Not very good quarterback.
Do you feel better about the Packers now after that game?
Really don't feel any different. It was basically like playing against a practice squad, so I'm not sure how much you can take away from that game.
Because I saw at least one angry tweet from you, like, their defense sucks or something like that.
The second drive, San Francisco was just mowing them down. And I was like, they're getting destroyed by Jerick McKinnon, Nick Mullins, and Richie James.
Richie James, by the way.
Yeah.
Little Blue Raider pride there. Yeah. What'd he end up with?
He had like 170 yards last night. He's the only person Nick Mullins threw the ball to. Like the only person.
Good he was him. Good.
He was good. And he was playing on like a hurt ankle. So just imagine what he could have done if he was healthy. Now, the problem for San Francisco is I'm not sure anybody came within 6 yards of covering Devontae Adams the entire night. So,
yeah.
Guy's a tough matchup.
That's all they need. Just one good receiver.
Apparently so. Well, there's an interesting report yesterday, Joe, by Mike Garofolo of the NFL Network about one Jadeveon Clowney. And essentially what his report says was Clowney could be in danger of missing this game on Sunday against Chicago. We know that he's been dealing with a knee injury. Clowney did not practice Wednesday, did not practice yesterday as well. What did you make of the report, and what do you make of maybe the prospects of not playing Sunday with Jadeveon Clowney?
I'm going to hold. I heard what he said. It was not definitive. He's not playing. He basically was told, you know, that there's concern, and then he sort of took it to that could be the Colts game too, right? But last week, Clowney did not practice Wednesday or Thursday. Same thing, the knee. The knee's been bothering him. He's been on the injury report basically all season. Practiced Friday, played Sunday. Didn't play all that well, though. Hey, he almost made plays Sunday, unlike Vic Beasley.
But Shane Bowen said it was one of his best games.
Yeah, but the weird thing to me, it's not like you absolutely have to cut Vic Beasley right now. I mean, we probably have seen for a couple weeks now the writing on the wall that at some point it could be possible. But I don't see why you would do that if you knew or even had a strong indication that Clowney wasn't going to play, right?
Yeah, like, what are you going to do in that spot if he can't go? I mean, right now you're going to assume that Derek Roberson's going to be in there anyway if he's active and able to go. But what do you do if Clowney can't go?
Yeah, and what I've seen of Roberson, I think Roberson has a chance to help the pass rush. I don't think Roberson is the guy you want out there, like, on first down. I mean, that's – especially you're talking about going from nothing to, like, going 0 to 60 like that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden playing all those snaps. I mean, they've got Tazar Skipper, which is – I mean, his name alone makes me root for him to produce.
Me too.
Because it would be great to continue to talk about Tazar Skipper. And Wyatt Ray. I mean, it's practice squad guys and Harold Landry. It's hard for me to buy that. Now, there's always a chance that maybe something happened very recently.
Yeah.
And then you're in a bind. But going into this week, if there was this thought that it's gotten worse for Clowney, I don't see how you make that move then.
Right. And, like, I don't know where it would have gotten worse this week with him not practicing, right? Like with on Wednesday and Thursday, unless you're like, you know,
walking to the store,
walking down the stair. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's happened. It hurt professional sport.
I've been hurt that way before, like walking to go to the fridge, you know, things like that. It happens at a certain age. But yeah, I know. I mean, what Mike, you sure it's Garofalo?
Yes.
We've had this discussion before. I really thought it was Garofalo.
I thought it was Garofalo, too, and I was blown away when I heard him say it. He was like, Mike Garofalo. I was like, oh.
I apologize, Mike Garofalo, for calling you Garofalo many times. But if what he says is true, then it wasn't a definitive report. You know, 11 a.m. today. 11 a.m. today, and it won't be reportable immediately, but that's when the Titans open practice period is. That's when media can watch a portion of practice. I'll be out there to see what's going on, and then we can't report anything until practice is over. But that'll tell the story. If he's not out there, then, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really interesting situation for the Titans Sunday against this banged-up offensive line that still looks relative to what they just played like an all-pro collection.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, look, we're talking about how much they're struggling with Clowney in there, and your argument all along has been, all right, well, what if you didn't have him? Well, we may find out on Sunday if they don't have him what it could look like. Now, me having said that, like Derek Roberson will go out there and get like 3 sacks, and he's like, well, okay then. Who needs Clowney? But what are they going to do on first and second down? Like, who are they going to put in there?
And
this would be another great example of having Kamale Correa.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know that you could go in there with Correa and Landry and have NFL outside linebackers who have played, you know, successfully to a certain extent in this league and can give you decent play. I mean, I have no idea. With Roberson, he played some last year, but he was a situational guy who, I mean, he's a skinny guy. He's fast. He's got some juice off the edge. But from what I've seen, he's not a guy they're going to feel great about just throwing him out there and playing 60 snaps. So,
no.
I don't know. So I'm a little bit, I don't want to say dubious of Garofalo's report, but again, when you listen to it, he's not saying Clowney's out. He's saying there's concern, and then, you know, he sort of took the leap. It sounded like basically if he misses this game, then he might just miss the next one. So we'll see. It will be reportable what the deal is. And again, you know, before this, it's possible like a Schefter gets something from someone.
Right.
But it will be reportable with something you see at practice and what you can report publicly, I think about 1 o'clock. I'll check that. Whenever practice ends is when it no longer is off the record.
Right. And I wonder, you know, we've talked about Clowney. This has been a similar thing that he's dealt with for a few weeks now. How much do we think the knee has limited him in terms of how effective he could be? Because we're all still kind of waiting for that Clowney game, quote unquote, that he just comes out and breaks through and has a huge impact on the game, and not maybe not even for a full game, but just a couple of huge moments in the game that can shift the way the game is going. We haven't seen that yet. I do wonder how much the knee is hindering him in doing that.
Yeah, I'm sure some, but that's the thing too. I mean, if you're going pros and cons on signing him, I mean, he's had a ton of injuries. You know, he has not been able to stay healthy, and obviously he had a core injury last year, and those are just, you know, devastating. You know, frankly, I think some of what he did last year is awfully impressive given that. And then he had to have, you know, core surgery. But, yeah, I'm sure it's part of it. I still think he looks explosive at times out there, and he makes some moves. But you almost wonder if it's like he can, you know, like he summons up enough to do that a few times a game, but he's not a constant.
Yeah.
There are other times where he just sort of is just easily blocked.
Right.
So, look, that was, to me, one of the biggest concerns, the biggest concern about even like with Tannehill is the injury history, even though it's been a while now. But I'm sure it's a factor, but they got to hope that, you know, it gets better. Maybe, you know, shutting him down for a certain amount of time could make sense, but it just doesn't make sense with his roster. I mean, you're in such a bind right now. And especially, as you said, without Correa, it's just a drop-off to total mystery almost with some of these guys.
Well, regardless of whether or not he can play, we're all kind of waiting for some sort of improvement to take place with the defense. If that doesn't happen this week against this offense, will you lose all hope that their defense is going to get fixed at any point this year? If they can't come out there against Nick Foles and the Bears and look any better than they have all season long, do you totally abandon hope at that point?
No. I mean, I guess one is like, how bad is it? I mean, if the Bears put up 40, maybe, you know. But no, I mean, look, Adoree Jackson, eventually, you know, there's a comeback, and then you think you might get better. Desmond King at some point gets weaved in there. Maybe that's a nice addition. Like, the secondary at its ceiling we're not going to see that Sunday. There's no way. I mean, even if King plays and Odori's back and plays the whole game, you can expect those guys to get better over time, communicating with each other, right? So there's still hope there. And then, I mean, I think the abandonment of hope would be the pass rush. I mean, and it's just, you know what Landry is, and he's going to give you all he has. And it really is. Is there another person anywhere who can you know, get home? And Clowney's your best hope.
Elijah, will you abandon hope if Nick Foles comes in and lights the Titans up?
Absolutely, because this offense is a train wreck.
It's terrible.
Not only is it like the 29th ranked offense, there are no redeeming qualities in it or watchable qualities whatsoever. David Montgomery still has been an underachieving back ever since he kind of came into the league.
What about those receivers, man?
Oh, yeah. Allen Robinson and the other guy. Insert name here. Mooney, the guy from Tulane.
Mooney's
good. It's kind of fun to watch, but like,
Mooney's good.
I can't remember his first name. Do you guys know his first name at the top of your head?
No.
Nope.
Exactly. And that's the biggest problem. And like, Jimmy Graham was cool to watch like 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Graham now, his hands are about as good as mine.
And they're really bad.
He dropped against the Saints last week. He dropped like 4 or 5 passes that were just gimmies. And like, it was one of the rare occasions that Foles threw something on the money and he'd still drop it anyway. I mean, if we were having an NFL offense dunk contest, yeah, I would watch Jimmy Graham all day. But this offense is so atrocious.
It's bad.
I will say, if they let David Montgomery run on them, that's a problem.
Then
because this offensive line, and he's fine. You know, he's a solid player, but like, you gotta stop that. You know,
that's been an underrated part of this defense that we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about.
Just Gio Bernard, baby.
Yeah, like, there's so many different other issues with the Titans defensively. They may have stopped the run. That's a problem. And we're talking like, yeah, like you said, Gio Bernard just gashing him. And even in the Pittsburgh game, we talked so much about Roethlisberger and how he just tore him apart with the dinking and the dunking. James Conner, I mean, he was gashing the Titans when they gave him the ball.
Yeah, the Bills didn't even try to run it. And then they were behind, and that was, you know, they've played some teams that haven't really tried to but have still been able to get some key runs.
Like, even David
Johnson.
Houston
did too. Yeah. No, Houston got them too often. So, yeah, that is. It's a part of just the overall front seven just not fitting and functioning like you need it to do.
When we come back, what do we make of the matchup tomorrow for the Vols heading into Arkansas to take on the Razorbacks? How much trouble could the Vols be in? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Saturday, November 14th, support Stars by running, walking, or boogieing for the Nashville Striders 20th Annual Shelby Bottoms Boogie 15K and 5K Run Walk, powered by Enterprise Rental Car. This event is perfect for the avid runner as well as the casual jogger, and it's on the certified course in the heart of Shelby Bottoms Park. You can also show your support and participate virtually. That's up to you. That's Saturday, November 14th for the Nashville Striders Shelby Bottoms Boogie to benefit Stars and powered by Enterprise Rental Car. For more information, please visit starsnashville.org. That's starsnashville.org. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. So, Joe, a big one tomorrow for the Vols. I've called it the most important game of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure so far at Tennessee. And we've talked about how important it could be for the program, how detrimental it could be for the program if they lose the game. Now I want to talk about the matchup specifically. What do you make of this matchup for the Vols heading into a place in Arkansas where if you had asked me heading into the season, I would probably have put Tennessee as a couple touchdown favorite heading into this game, maybe a little bit more. But based on what I've seen from Sam Pittman and Barry Odom and that Arkansas defense, this is going to be an interesting matchup for the Vols. What do you make of what Tennessee's walking into tomorrow in Arkansas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like a lot of games just from the Vols' perspective. Can they run the football? I mean, it's the best thing that they have. It really is. You know, their defense has been underwhelming to me. I still think they can make strides there, other than Henry To'o, who's just terrific. And, you know, they've got some guys in the back end who I think can play better. They've got to be a lot more disruptive up front. But, and when we talk about quarterback all the time, run the football. You got to be able to do that. And I think they can. I mean, Arkansas has a good defense, has elevated from atrocious to, you know, really solid under Barry Odom. It's a heck of a hire. That's one of those just great, you know, you get a head coach who doesn't work out, but he's a great coordinator, you know. He's come in there and clearly knows how to put a defense together and get kids to maybe play over their head or play together, play cohesively. Defensive coordinators, that can matter. They can make a difference on a defense. Crazy enough. But I still think the Vols can run the football and, you know, control the game that way. And you got to – I mean, I think you got to play from ahead and get the game the way you want it in this matchup against that team, you know. You don't want this to be – it's got to be Garantano flinging it all over the field.
You don't. And you've also – to that point, you've still got to be able to trust him to make some throws. But he's got to know heading into this game that Arkansas has been very opportunistic defensively with how they've created turnovers. And Hudson Clark specifically on Arkansas, he's got 3 picks on the year so far. Now, he had a bad game against Texas A&M, and they kind of lit him up a little bit. But if you're Jarrett Garantano, the decision-making – has been good against Alabama, even though, you know, the offense was what it was. I didn't think there were really many reckless throws that he made out there. That's what killed you against Kentucky, the decision-making, the second half against Georgia, some of the decisions that you make. If you do that tomorrow against Arkansas, they will capitalize on that. They will get those turnovers, and that's something you can't have in this game.
Yeah, and if you do what you should do up front in this game and put yourself in good situations – you know, then that's why you're still going with Garantano, which is crazy because you think of some of the turnovers he's had, and they're hard to explain. It's not like those turnovers against Kentucky were like in the second half when they're trying to come back or something like that. Your desperation play. It's just like dumb plays that just make no sense. But, I mean, Arkansas has given up 178.2 a game on the ground, 4.55 per carry.
Yeah.
And they haven't faced – much of what they're about to see, you know. I mean, they haven't. I mean, Georgia certainly has a really good offensive line and backs, but that was also the first game for Georgia, and they were all discombobulated. They changed quarterback. Dwan Mathis was a QB. Then they finally go to Bennett. I mean, if those two teams played again, it'd probably look a lot different. And I mean, again, this defense that has limitations to it. It's been a heck of a story to, like you said, create turnovers and. You know, play above, way above what we thought they would. But that's still the reality is Tennessee should be able to line up and run the ball at them.
So do we think that Sam Pittman has come in and just elevated the talent that he has? Or do we think it's a classic case of maybe a little bit of what we're seeing in the NFL with the Jaguars, where you start great and everything looks like, oh, man, this team could be a lot better than we thought. And then as the season continues to wear on, they turn more and more into what we thought they could be heading into the season. That's going to be a big question that I'm looking for in this game on Saturday. And I think how Tennessee comes out in this game will tell you a lot about what Arkansas is. Because I think from a talent perspective, if Tennessee does the things they're supposed to do and doesn't screw it up, they should win this game. That's just – I think that's – when you stack the two rosters up, that's just Tennessee's the more talented team.
Yeah, no, I agree. Look, it's been an awfully – I mean, really, it's not like these guys have, to me, fallen off a cliff. I mean, obviously, they played 2.5 way above their headquarters against Georgia. Still ends up 37-10, but That was still impressive, but it was also that was much more. Or we thought, like, okay, so Georgia's just a mess right now, and they'll figure it out. And it's the pandemic, and then but then they go. That was the shocker. Remember, Mississippi State had just gone to LSU, and that was so. There's your coach of the year, Mike Leach, and then all of a sudden Sam Pittman goes in there to Mississippi State in Mike Leach's debut, and it's like, what is happening? So then it's like, okay, really, the pandemic, right? You're just never gonna. But then the next week, man, they should have won that Auburn game. That was. I mean, to me, so that's building to that. That's a better performance. I mean, they had that game, and, you know, we know what happened with Gus's SEC officials and how that turned out. And they haven't been deterred. You know, they beat Ole Miss, and I'll tell you what. You know, this is where I think matchups are interesting in football, because I look at Ole Miss's offense, and I'm like, how did you keep Ole Miss at 21 points?
Yeah.
You know? Like, how I watched them play. I mean, I watched the whole Alabama game. Like, they're not stopping them. They got no chance. So that's the most impressive thing. So that's building to that. And then, you know, it's a little bit of reality with the 42-31 loss to Texas A&M. Honestly, I didn't watch a lot of the Ole Miss game. That one is a little bit – that's the stunning result of the bunch. But it shows you they can play good D. The thing is, I think with matchups, I think this matchup is – you know, it's worse for them because it's a power team. It should be a power team. That's how they're built. That's how they should play. That's their best personnel, and that's how Jim Chaney needs to use it. But he also needs to have balance and deception and pre-snap shifts, and, you know, be a pro kind of offense that doesn't make it easy to predict what's going to happen. But I think if you have a good game plan in here and you get decent quarterbacking, you're going to end up with a big number on the ground.
And if I'm Jim Chaney and Jeremy Pruitt, I'm showing Garantano the Ole Miss game, because what happened in that game, Matt Corral threw six picks.
That's incredible.
And two of them came back for touchdowns. So that's how important taking care of the ball is against Arkansas. They are very good at jumping in front of routes and capitalizing on turnovers. And you just can't have that happen. Your margin for error for Tennessee, it's just not there with the defense, which we'll talk about here in just a second. But more than that, just how inept at times they've been moving the ball offensively, you can't waste possessions with turnovers. I mean, you're just not going to win if you're Tennessee if that happens.
It's just amazing, too. Now, I understand who they were playing, but, you know, last week, Matt Corral could have, you know, I mean he was not close to making a mistake.
He was not.
He was barely ever close to throwing an incompletion. But yes,
I think he went 31 of 34 last Saturday,
and he actually beat Eli Manning's school record. I think 19 straight completions to start the game. I think that's right, 19 or 20.
Yeah,
so. But six picks. I mean, that's just incredible, and that's just. But that also shows you, like they're opportunistic. That's how they need. They need to play that way. It's almost like the Titans. Their record would certainly be worse at 5-2 if they didn't create some really important turnovers.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't give them that. It's easy to say that to Jarrett Garantano, but it's like, just don't do that. Take the easy throws, take some shots at Josh Palmer if they're presented, but, you know, just don't give them the game. And I do. I think the Vols are better.
Number one thing I'm looking for in the game for Tennessee is, does their offense coming off of a bye week look any different? Does it look any more expanded in terms of the way that Jim Chaney is calling plays? Like, do you use Josh Palmer more? Do you use Velus Jones more than we've seen him being used with the speed that he has? I think that's a weapon that's been heavily underutilized. And with Jalin Hyatt, his breakout performance against Alabama, does he see the field more often? I think he will. I think he should. But how does that go about affecting what Jim Chaney does in terms of his play calling? I agree with you. I think the number one priority should be running the ball. But there are going to be situations where you've got to take some shots and throw it down the field. And I'm interested to see how Jim Chaney's play calling is different heading into this game, because I think it has to be. It's been very underwhelming to me so far.
Yeah, like run the ball, but also on first down sometimes throw a hitch to Palmer. You know, I mean, you got to keep these defenses off balance. Barry Odom, again, very good defensive coordinator. I mean, you can't be too vanilla against him either and think you're going to, you know, you got to have a good plan. I agree. This is a big Jim Chaney game for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's an important half of the season for him, because we talked about it earlier in the week. If this doesn't improve, maybe Jeremy Pruitt decides to make a staff change at that point. Another one. We've seen he's not afraid to do that.
He's done those.
Jeremy Pruitt, not averse to the staff change. When we come back, how did the Vols improve defensively, especially in an area that I thought heading into the season was going to be a strength for them, and it has not been thus far? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're almost to the weekend. In some ways, Joe, this has been a very fast week. In other ways, this week has dragged on forever.
Quite a week. Quite a week.
I'm going to the mountains this weekend.
That's exciting.
Deleting Twitter. I am deleting Facebook. Deleting Instagram, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Why would you want to get off the internet now? It's the best time for it.
Is it?
This is what it's made for.
I guess so.
It's been quite a week for the internet. So you're telling me that you are going to go Saturday night, and you're going to be sitting there watching the Vols.
Yeah.
And then Garantano's going to throw a pick six.
I'm going to have to internalize it.
And you're not going to tweet about it?
That's what I'm telling you.
Hmm.
I'm going to have to internalize it.
Hmm.
What do you think? Okay. What do you think are the chances I make it through the whole weekend without being on social media one time? I'm very ashamed to admit the last day that I was not on social media at all was in 2013. I went on a cruise where I didn't have a choice.
Holy cow.
That was the last day that I had zero social media.
Wow. I think it's the last time I didn't either. Would have been like in a situation like a cruise type scenario, yeah, where there was no internet and I had to caveman it for a couple days.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's interesting that you guys, yeah, that you remember that. That is depressing. I have had some vacations, and it's definitely been like a, okay, you're put the phone away and that, like, so I think I've had a day here, a day, but honestly, probably not more than like a day, and then it's like, all right, the thing about Twitter is it's a news feed too,
yeah,
and it's really like actually this week I've actually watched like some TV news because there's, yeah, newsworthy stuff happening in the country.
Right.
But usually that's not the case. Usually I know who I want to follow and read. I read, you know, stories or whatever. Anything that's happening is followed along with on Twitter.
Right.
Anyway, right?
I just remember the last time I did it because it was so weird. Like the first day I was out at sea and I didn't have like access to anything, I was like, I don't even know what to do with myself. And then, like, as I got through the week, I was like, this is great. And why I haven't done it since then is beyond me. But I'm doing it this weekend.
Yeah, it's not even an option. And again, I use Twitter a lot, but, like, a lot of it is I wish I could get rid of it. It's just a time drain, and then you get mad at some nameless, you know, person hiding behind a fake account.
Yes.
And it's like, why? What are you doing here? You know? But I tell you, you think back to, we're lucky that we had at least a big chunk of our lives where we didn't have this stuff. I mean, honestly, because I do look at my kids and kids in general, and it's like, it's all they know.
Well, I was telling, like, my wife that we are the last generation who is going to grow up with any sort of knowledge of what it's like to not have information in your hand all the time.
Right.
Like, the smartphone was really starting to be a big thing the year I graduated high school.
that's yeah, depressing for me, but keep going.
Well, you think it's depressing for you. What about Elijah?
I was about a freshman in high school.
See?
I think the smartphone. I didn't get my first iPhone until I was a junior in high school.
Yeah.
So I had an iPod Touch as a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
And I had a Motorola Razr as like a seventh grader.
What a phone.
Wow.
Which you couldn't get on Twitter on.
No.
But I
had one of those.
So for the most part, I mean, I still remember like reading Sporting News and Sports Illustrated magazines as a kid, which now seems just archaic and is baffling.
I used to celebrate when I got the Sports Illustrated for Kids magazine. I was like,
every month,
baby.
It is. You got the little cards in there too. Yeah. I still have them all stored away somewhere. They're not worth anything, but I mean, there's some sentimental value there. But yeah, so I think for me, it started getting wild with social media. I wasn't even allowed to have Facebook until I was a freshman in high school, which was only around for maybe 2 years before that. It was like 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't let our kids do the Facebook, but they're on the gram. Which I don't even, like, I can't even get into that world. You know,
you sounded uncomfortable just saying the gram, so I can't imagine that you're on it often.
I think it's a funny way to
say. Do we think by the end of 2020 we can talk you into getting an Instagram account?
Oh, there's zero. No, I mean honestly, like my wife started my Facebook account for me, and I don't do that. I mean, there's no. I get emails sometimes because she'll tag me with like, oh, look at this cute picture of the kids, like a memory from 5 years ago, and I'll like it, and then I'll get off. I can't. Twitter is enough. It's a news feed, and then it's, you know, you're sharing your stories and all this stuff. And it's. I mean, I like the interactions mostly. Some of them are awful. And then, like, this is a week where sometimes you look at Twitter and you're like, oh, my God. Get me away from this place. But
hence why this weekend I will not be partaking.
No, it's good timing on your part. Just get out, go, get away. But, I mean, I think it's just – we all figured it out. We all figured it out before we had just a map in your hand of how to get someplace. You get directions, you know, or leave a message on someone's answering machine, and we'll meet you at this place in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you found them. It's amazing. Like now, we have to basically be under full surveillance and also be fully surveilling everyone.
Yeah.
Now, that's one thing that I have never had to do, and that is read a map, a physical map in a car. Because when I started driving was right around the time that I could actually have my phone be my GPS and give me turn-by-turn direction. You put a map in my hands while I'm trying to drive somewhere, or I'm like riding shotgun, it ain't happening. We are not making wherever our destination is if I don't have my phone. I don't even... never used a Garmin.
I was going to say, that was a big gift whenever it was. Like, I got that for a Christmas gift, a Garmin.
Yeah, right, TomTom.
Well, the best part of, like, having the map in your hand was just being like, we're about 9 miles away. Just taking a guess. You have no idea.
Right.
We're about 9 miles down the road. This feels right. Let's pull off here.
I think we're on right here on the map. See? Yeah.
You give me a map. I'm looking for where X is because I think that's where I'm supposed to go. I don't know how to read a map like that.
Writing down directions too. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, I used to, you know, I have the notepad, and it's like, okay, you know, ding, ding, ding. The MapQuest printouts did that. We all figured it out. We all lived. And now look at us.
We don't.
I'm jealous of you. Maybe I'll put my phone away all weekend too. Not likely.
Let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, I went to McGavick High, and I had a cool calculator watch and a mini game. That was the extent of his technology.
Calculator
watch,
yeah.
Calculator
those
watch.
Those are cool. Mini game, like the little little Pac-Mans. I had a little football game with the little dots. Basically, it's just like your dot goes this way, and then you're trying to dodge the other dot. That's football.
Yeah.
You know, it had a cool picture like football, and it's just like, okay, so it's two red dots. But, hey.
I actually had one of those.
Hours.
Got one of those for Christmas 1 year when I was like 6 years old and was just obsessed with it. And then I got a Nintendo 64 and got to play Madden, and then it was over from there.
I still play the Nintendo 64.
I still play Madden on the Nintendo 64 because it is hilarious. The comedic value to watching these little square football players, watching Eddie George as basically a square run up and down a field.
Got Pat Summerall and John Madden calling
hilarious.
The game.
Hilarious. Yes.
Man, that announcing crew.
Lovely.
So good.
Very good. I don't know how we got on this subject. I will take responsibility. This is my fault.
It's fine.
We were supposed to talk about the Vols. We'll do that here for the next few minutes. The Vols defensively, Joe, looking at this game tomorrow against Arkansas, there was an area of this team heading into the season that I thought would be a real strength for Tennessee defensively, and that is in the secondary. And so far, it just hasn't been. Now, there have been some injury-related concerns to that. Bryce Thompson, as we know, has been playing with a torn pec, which is just unbelievable to me. Alante Taylor's been banged up a little bit. Sean Schamberger, I think, now getting his feet back underneath him and hasn't played up to the standard in which he set last year. So a lot of different issues you could point to, but if this defense is going to turn around at any point this year, I think the secondary is going to have to be a big part of that. And so far, especially with the experienced guys they've got back there, I've been very underwhelmed from what I've seen.
Yeah, I do think some of that is the lack of pass rush. Like DeAndre Johnson early, remember, it was like, okay, they found a guy who at least in situations can really get after. And then I haven't seen.
Has he done anything since he got kicked out of the game against Georgia?
Penalty against Georgia. It's like, you know, it's like it's totally flipped for him. But, I mean, they've really lacked that. So some of that, I think, is those guys just not having the help that they need. I mean, again, any secondary, if you give people enough time, they're going to get beat. But you know, they've also, you know, you play Alabama, and that's going to make you feel worse about things. But, yeah, I giving up the middle of the field too easily, I feel like that's been a big thing. Maybe Key Lawrence is a guy who can step in there and make a difference. I think Schamberger was hurt. Maybe is he still hurt? I mean, we found out that Bryce Thompson has this torn pec and is still playing with it, which is it's terrible to even say it out loud. Because I think he's really good. I think Bryce Thompson is a pro. And Alante Taylor and Kenneth George are pretty good. But I do think that maybe Key Lawrence, freshman, top-rated prospect in this class, is a guy. He's a good-looking player. I think he's going to be a really good player. Now, can he come in and help that a little bit second half of the season? Maybe. I think he's going to get a chance. I mean, we're going to have David Ubben on later, but he had a piece this week about him getting more work at the Star during the open week. One of those young guys who got more of a look, and maybe that'll help. But I really think that it ties together with, you know, again, the coordination of pass rush and pass coverage, and they've got to find somebody who can be more disruptive.
So Jeremy Pruitt made the decision a few weeks ago to fire Jimmy Brumbaugh on the defensive line, and look, it's been basically one game since then with Alabama, and that's a tough bar. But don't at some point, if you're a Tennessee fan, you want to see some pretty drastic improvement on the defensive line with Jeremy Pruitt taking over coaching that position. Otherwise, like, if you don't, why are you firing someone if you're not going to come in and improve it yourself? I think there's pressure on Jeremy Pruitt to get that defensive line turned around. Like, how much it can get turned around, I don't know, but there's got to be some improvement if you're going to go out and make a move like that.
Yeah, and he what did he say? I think he said every play the linemen should be 4 to 6 inches lower than what they are. You know, everybody, obviously, you know, pad level. You know, you talk about leverage and all that stuff. But so apparently there's just a habitual issue with how they're playing. So, yeah, like, let's see some progress then. It's enough pressure on him to, like, win. You know, you better win this game or it's going to be ugly as the head coach. And also the D-line better look good while you win. But, like, maybe, again, a young guy, Amari Thomas, maybe he can get in there. And but you're asking a lot of young guys sometimes in these situations. But I do think some of the veterans are sort of serviceable, decent guys. Like did we think anyone took a step back with Brumbaugh as the D-line coach? I just don't know that they really have veteran guys who are all that great.
Right. Like, it's not like there's this huge talent pool that they've got on the defensive line that's got all this experience that's just not performing.
Like, Aubrey Solomon's fine. Yeah. You know, those guys are fine, but they have gotten themselves to, like, SEC. I understand it's not been all perfect, but the O-line is legit. They've got guys that's the guys you want, but they don't have the guys, at least not the guys developed yet on the other side.
Right.
But, hey, Pruitt, you took over, so let's see Amari Thomas take steps and become – you know, again, I like Elijah Simmons a lot. I mean, you gotta find some people who can give you more. And, yeah, we're going to be judging him in all sorts of ways Saturday, Jeremy Pruitt.
When we come back, it's a big slate of college football action tomorrow, including a couple of huge games in both the ACC and the SEC. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, an interesting weekend in college football. The Pac-12 getting back in action this weekend. Week 3 of the Big 10. Lots of interesting matchups around the country. Two of the big ones, I think, are Notre Dame versus Clemson, and then, of course, Florida versus Georgia here in the SEC. Which game are you looking forward to more? Notre Dame, Clemson, Florida, and Georgia?
Definitely Florida, Georgia.
Really?
And I think Notre Dame, Clemson may be a good game. I hope it is. Frankly, I can't get that excited with no Trevor Lawrence. It's Notre Dame against Clemson light. You know, it's Notre Dame against Tab Cola Clemson.
Wow.
For anybody who knows, I think Tab Cola, by the way, are they discontinuing?
I think so.
I think I heard that.
Rest
very, in peace. Very sad. Yeah, very sad.
Great. I will not tolerate DJ Uiagalelei slander here on the show.
You just had to show off. Look at the way that just came. I mean, that was,
it's just natural.
Uiagalelei.
Yeah,
it's actually way easier than you think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. You gotta get it down one time, and then I feel like you've got it.
I will say I am intrigued to watch him in this game because we know he's the next guy, and he looks like he's gonna be a guy. Yeah. You know,
I am shocked that the Clemson quarterback's good. Backup quarterback.
Yeah, right. But I love the Cole. Whoever first made the Culpepper comparison, he's just so big. You know, he's just so big and strong and big time arm. So I'm excited about it, but I'm more excited about Florida Georgia. I really am intrigued by that game. I feel like there's a lot of sentiment out there that this might be Florida, putting a hurting on that team. But you know what? Florida's defense could help Georgia's offense get well.
Yeah. Florida's defense, there are some holes, to put it kindly.
So we might see. But, the Florida offense-Georgia defense matchup, that is a primo. That's a primo strength-against-strength matchup.
It is. We had Peter Burns on yesterday from the SEC Network, and to your point, Peter Burns feels like Florida is going to come out and handle Georgia in this game. I think he said a 2-touchdown win for Florida in this game, which I'll be honest, like, I think I still may pick Georgia in this game. I think it's going to be close, but 2 touchdowns seems like a lot for Florida up against that Georgia defense, who I still think is very, very good. I mean, Florida has not seen anything like that Georgia defense they're about to see.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I think it sets up to be a really good game. So I'm probably most excited about that game this week. I'll tell you what, Friday night, we've got two at least somewhat interesting games tonight. I mean, the U, Miami's at NC State, and then BYU, Boise State, if you can stay up.
Two undefeated teams. Now, one of them's 2-0, but yeah, two undefeated teams.
Yeah, two ranked teams. And BYU, Zach Wilson, people talking about him for the Heisman. So a rare chance for him to actually show something on national TV, FS1. So that's actually pretty exciting to have games like that on a Friday.
Another Big Ten matchup that I think is very interesting this weekend, Michigan against Indiana. Indiana ranked 13th at the end or in the country right now. Michigan a 3.5-point favorite going on the road to Indiana. If Harbaugh loses this game against Indiana and he drops games against Michigan State and Indiana in back-to-back weeks, it's going to get very ugly with Michigan.
It is going to get very ugly, but this is usually – so Harbaugh has these losses. I mean, again, he's lost all but one game, I think, at home to Michigan State. He's lost all his home games to Ohio State. He's had other losses here and there. He usually bounces back from something like this. So it usually doesn't get to the point of total he usually handles these games, which is why his record's good and why still a lot of Michigan fans are like, yeah, but he's still good, and look at the record, and look at the recruiting. And so I'll still be surprised, honestly, if Michigan comes out with another effort like that and loses this game. But it's a really fun 11 a.m. game Saturday.
It is. And, look, I think Michigan, we've seen this before. Typically when they lose a game, they'll respond and win the next week. And then whenever they have another big matchup, they'll probably lose after that. That's typically how Harbaugh goes about things in Michigan. But I don't know. Like, there's a lot of negativity around that program right now. And Indiana's good.
Well, Penix Jr. is.
He's really good.
I think he's a pro.
Should upset Tennessee fans because apparently he was coming to Tennessee, and Jeremy Pruitt was like, no thanks. We got our guy.
He would be. I mean, I'm trying to imagine his skill set in this offense. He'd be an improvement over Jarrett Garantano. I feel good about saying that.
I do too.
And it's a very, very different offense, obviously. But he's man, he can wing it around. He's a heck of a player. So yeah, that's a tough one for the Vols. And yeah, that's where Michigan could be in trouble. I just still think that I still think it's a really talented team. And I like Joe Milton. He just didn't have his best game against Michigan State.
Going back to Clemson and Notre Dame, we've talked about maybe some scenarios of what happens if Notre Dame wins this game and Clemson loses. In all likelihood, they're going to have a rematch at the end of the year, and you would think that Trevor Lawrence is back and available to play in that game, and we'll see how much of a difference that would make. What will Clemson prove to you if they win this game, and more specifically, if they win this game comfortably against Notre Dame without Trevor Lawrence in there?
That it's just going to be so boring the rest of the way. with them. I won't even watch them anymore if they do that. You know, it's like, okay, see you in the playoff. Throw whoever you got at quarterback. I mean, really, we could all use a competitive game here.
Do you have Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State fatigue yet? I do. Like, a part of me really enjoys it and appreciates how good they are, and the other part of me is like, oh, my God, okay. Somebody beat them. Like,
right.
Somebody step in there and beat them consistently.
I mean, I just, first of all, I want them all in the playoff because I know they're the best three teams. And I don't have fatigue with Ohio State yet because they just started playing. By the way, Ohio State.
I just mean, not specifically this year, but just
in
like
general,
in general.
As programs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Alabama, yeah, and Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State, the thing about Ohio State is, of all those programs, if you really think about it, it's really the only major program that has been recession-proof, recession-free over, you're talking back to the 80s. I mean, really,
yeah.
Like Alabama had their stretch before Saban. I mean, obviously, like Clemson, I mean, they're new money in this situation, you know? But Ohio State, I mean, they had like Jim Tressel came in, you know, so John Cooper wasn't quite, you know, Jim Tressel came in and have one so-so year, and then they go win a national championship.
Yeah.
And it's just, and Urban Meyer, some people think he upgraded over Tressel, and he won one too, but honestly, they've been absolutely just a big step above anybody in the Big Ten, but nationally too. And yeah, just where does it end? Where is the Ryan Day? Looks like he's going to keep it going there. Dabo? I mean, Alabama's could be interesting, you know, depending if they make a bad choice. It's not going to be easy to follow Saban, but right now, yeah, it's those three, really, and everybody else. And Oklahoma recruits at that level too, but, I mean, when's the last time you felt like they could stop anyone with a pulse?
It's been a while. I mean, that's not an Oklahoma thing. That's an entire Big 12 thing, which it just boggles my mind, like how – great they are offensively in that conference and why nobody can play defense. Like, and this is not a recent thing. Like, they just cannot play defense and haven't been able to for like 15 years in that. I don't understand it.
It's really weird. I mean, you got to be a certain age, but I remember when Oklahoma had some nasty defenses. The Boz, I mean, if you want to really date yourself, but Nebraska, of course, was in that league, but Texas, I mean, they used to have defenses. And, yeah, it's like they've all agreed not to play defense. But then when they go play other leagues, it's the same thing. Like if Tennessee would have played Oklahoma this year, probably wouldn't have gone well. They would have gotten torched on the other side. But
right.
I think they would have run for 250 on that defense.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you watch that Oklahoma game against, who was it, Iowa State early on in the season, they couldn't tackle anyone. I mean, I'm not sure they could have tackled the three of us in that game. It was incredible. And we had Ryan McGee on like the week after it happened, and he spent like the first 5 minutes of the segment just trying to break down how inept Oklahoma is at tackling people. And I just don't understand how the Big 12 has allowed themselves to get to this point, to the point where now, I mean, they're out of it. They're not getting in the playoff. With Oklahoma State going down next week, they have no chance. They're not getting in.
Right. No, they're done. Yeah, it's like tackling and covering for whatever reason. And there's still guys who come out of that league and play in the NFL. So –
yeah.
It's not like it's a void of talent. A lot of guys come out of that league and play in the NFL, but for whatever reason, it's weird. I mean, look, it's fun. I'll watch a 48-44 game. I'm not opposed to it, but a little bit of balance would be nice.
When we come back, how concerned are we about the Titans' offense since Taylor Lewan went down? We'll get into that discussion on the other side of the break. But first, Joe, you have a word from FanDuel.
I do have a word from FanDuel, and a word for people who have been sitting around watching a game, seeing an ad for the FanDuel Sportsbook, and wondering, is that legal here in Tennessee? Well, it is, in case you didn't know. Sports betting is legal. FanDuel Sportsbook is now legal, and you can place your first bet on it risk-free. So you can get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. No strings attached. Place any bet you want, anything you want. Bet on the Lions. I mean, you can do it. You can bet on the Detroit Lions, and you can get your money back if you lose. Risk-free bet. If you win, you actually keep the cash. If you lose, you get it all back up to $1,000 in bonus site credit, so you can take another shot at the end zone in the house. And the generous risk-free bets are just the beginning. FanDuel Sportsbook has a simple app. They've got live betting on every game. They've got all kinds of prop bets. They got same-game parlays, over-under, a lot of different things you can do. You can combine multiple bets from one game into one parlay. And then once you win, you get your winnings in as little as 24 hours. So to claim that risk-free bet, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I've done it. It's very easy. It's very easy to do. It's very easy to use. You sign up with promo code Joe, J-O-E, so they know I sent you. FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Joe. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.